Yeah, it asks you to count backwards in threes, which is very difficult to do, especially if you're a drummer. So I was going 97, 94, and I couldn't get past. And he actually made me shake. He made the tremor by me activating all these things in my body, my hands and my legs. I started to shake violently.
Right.
And he just said, stop. He said, you've got Parkinson's disease. And
how old were you then?
50. And I couldn't believe it. First of all, I didn't know what it was. He just signed me off. He said, you've got Parkinson's disease. I'll review you in 3 months. And I went out. This is in Kilkenny. I went out and I got into the car and I drove back to Dublin. And I was listening to radio and it was like surreal. You don't take it in. And then you get worse because someone has told you you've actually got something going on. So I went back to Dublin that day and I phoned the Geldof office and I told them that I was after being diagnosed with Parkinson's. And about 10 days later, we had a show coming up in Finland. And of course, within the 10 days, I just got instantly worse.
Did you?
I just went down. I think that's what happens, you know, you just, the realisation of that you've got something going on and you don't know what it is and you don't know how to deal with it.
And you shut down.
Yeah, the body, I just went into a place that I don't know, I don't want to go there again. And then I went back to my doctor after the 3 months and he put me on medication. And after a month or so of being on this, I actually felt a bit of a recovery.
It's like dopamine, is it?
Yeah, I lack dopamine. I don't make enough to send the signal to my left side, which as a drummer it's a disaster because you know how fast I would be playing and I just can't get them beats out anymore, you know. And I had to pack it in because, you know, it's just too difficult to try and get all those beats out. And I felt under pressure again, you know, because the medicine was obviously not enough now. The disease had progressed.
Did it break your heart?
Oh. At the time, yeah. It was... What I tried to do is I tried to not talk about it, even though it's there. I know it's there. But in the last couple of years, I've really come to terms with it and I fight it every day, you know.
You're very welcome back to The Breakfast Show with Anne-Marie Kelly. And Fionn Marram sent me a letter, a lovely letter. And he must have known that I really get very weak at the knees when I get letters, handwritten letters, especially from young men, which I never got when I was growing up. Fionn, you're from Portlaoise.
I am.
How are you?
I'm grand, a bit tired, but...
Yeah, but listen, what kind of, drew me towards the letter was the fact that you had so much detail in it and you kind of felt you didn't fit into the world of music nowadays, where you didn't do the Ed Sheeran covers and you kind of went, what am I going to do? I like Johnny Cash, I like country, you like 1950s rock and roll. Who influenced you, first of all? Who would have got you into that kind of music?
I was volunteering in a charity shop and I went in and I saw Walk the Line, the Johnny Cash movie in there. It was like 150. So I was like, I picked it up and I went home and watched it and I was just like, God, this is great. Like, this is so cool. So I went onto Spotify and I started listening to some of his albums and it was just great. And I just kind of, then I got into all the older guys, like the likes of Elvis and Jerry Lee Lewis, all the guys from the movie. And I was just like, oh, this is great music. Like, why isn't people listen to this more nowadays?
Well, let's hear Folsom Prison Blues. This is Fionn Marram from Portlaoise, and he's going to sing Johnny Cash.
I hear the train a-coming, it's rolling around the bend, and I ain't seen the sunshine since I don't know when. I'm stuck in Folsom Prison, and time keeps dragging on. But that train keeps a-rolling on down to San Antonio.
and I'd let that lonesome whistle blow my blues away.
That voice, hey? Huh? The blues. Do the low note for me again.
Blow my blues away.
When I got your tape, when I got your CD, right, in the post, I thought he's either 29, 30s, or maybe older. But when you said you were turning 18 2 weeks ago, you were only 17 when you recorded that.
Yeah, yeah.
So you bought your microphone in Deals for €1.50, was it?
Yeah, yeah. So I just went in, I was looking. It was a little clip-on microphone. It was clipped onto my shirt, and I had it pointed up towards my mouth. So that's why the guitar was kind of not really as loud as it could have been, because the microphone was up on my shirt. But I got a new one at the weekend. It's one of the ones that clips into the tablet and comes out along the table, and you can bend it up. It was only €1.50 as well. But
where'd you get that one?
Eurogiant.
Mom didn't know Dad had any ambition to be anything other than a percussionist. And he got a position at Queen's in Belfast and shipped us over. And that's really it.
So yeah.
They brought with them a massive record collection.
Isn't it funny, you know? What would you bring with you if you had to move? Like, you know, they chose the record collection.
The record collection.
Yeah. What was in it? What kind of stuff were they listening to?
Well, I have to hand it to Dad. He's the best A&R man in the world because he had selected so much incredible music. I mean, a lot of it was Atlantic Records stuff that was, you know, American imports.
Great.
Well, I got a woman way over town that's good to me. Oh, yeah. Say, I got a woman way over town.
Beatles, Stones, Ray Charles, Aretha Franklin, Stan Getz, you know, some really odd out there jazz stuff as well. As well as Indian music, Scottish drumming music. I mean, you name it, Dad had the whole thing going on. And
he probably would have got that from being in that jazz ensemble of people sharing music at the time.
That's right. That's right.
Oh, yeah. She says the loving early in the morning just for me.
There's a lot of stuff still in that vinyl collection you will not find on YouTube or on Spotify or anywhere.
There you go.
And there's probably some priceless records in there, you know, from labels that don't exist anymore. Certainly, one of the artists who was a big influence was a guy called Abdullah Ibrahim. He used to be known as Dollar Brand.
So do you remember it as boys? Was it playing in the kitchen? Was it there in the house?
We were fascinated by the turntable itself, just putting the vinyl on and watching the record spin, listening to it then and looking at the album covers.
Picture yourself in a boat on a river with tangerine trees and marmalade skies.
Looking at Sgt. Pepper and trying to work out who all these people are.
Yeah.
And going to the back and reading these obscure lyrics and trying to work out what
do they mean?
Whole means in a day in the life. And
do you know now what they mean? I don't know what they mean.
Part of the attraction, I have to say, was the fact that we weren't allowed to touch the records. My dad Roy's away to Belfast City Centre on a Saturday afternoon, and we were like, yeah, no problem, we're just going to go out and play football with our friends. As soon as they left, we're straight in there sliding out the records. Both mum and dad have like photographic memory, so if you touch anything, they know. So it was like you had to remember where you put the record, you slip a bit of paper in, got to take the record out, make sure it comes out properly, don't leave any thumbprints on it.
Sa ger handin latsen i otse, sa ger handin loskagus dort, sa ger handin latsen i otse, skopel down och krig fen vot ho. Schnee.
Schnee, you've got a crowd. Isn't it wonderful, the human voice?
I think it's the ultimate musical instrument, and the Shannos gives you the opportunity to express it. It's great.
Matthew O'Cassidy. And where are you from?
I'm from Dublin.
Right. And you're holding?
Illan pipes.
Yes. And they look beautiful. Absolutely.
Thank you. It's a uniquely Irish instrument. And it's part of our culture and our heritage. A lot of people don't know what Illan pipes are. Do you know? Like, they just think they're bagpipes or whatever. And they don't know that it's actually a uniquely Irish instrument.
Yeah.
So the more they're exposed and showcased at events like this, you know, the better.
Yeah.
You know?
And how did it fall on your lap? How did you come across it?
Just came down with a stork dropped it down a few years. No, there's music in the family. My uncle plays the pipes, and that's the main reason I heard him playing, and I was playing other instruments, and then when I was about 9 or 10, I just decided that I'd love a set of my own and start playing the pipes. So that's how it started, moment of madness.
Yeah.
And it's a long...
It's sort four of, buttons there.
Yeah, well, there's a chanter. You play the melody on the chanter, and you've got drones. You've three drones that play the bass. The note at the bottom... The bottom note of the chanter, which is D, which is what the scale that the pipes are based on, and then you've got regulators. So these are, it's three rows of keys that harmonise together, and you can play chords and accompany yourself while playing. So the regulators, every bagpipe in the world has drones and the chanter, but these are the only pipes that have regulators.
Okay.
They're actually the most advanced form of bagpipe in the world, you know.
Right.
Yeah. So you blow with your elbow. Illan is the Irish word for elbow, and that's why they're called the Illan pipes. So you blow the air using your elbow instead of your lungs, and you fill the bag up. From there, there's seven pipes altogether. So this is the chanter. There's two octaves. It's the only bagpipe in the world as well that has two full octaves. Then I've got the drones here, so I'm tuning them up now. That makes that bass sort of sound. And then the regulators here. So they make the... You can play chords and accompany yourself whatever way you want. So between everything, yeah, it'd be seven sort of different sounds going at the same time.
Okay, yeah. Thank you so much. Yeah. Yeah.
And from the warmth of the Illan pipes by Machu Casada, I go out into the rain and I go down towards the catering area where Richie Kavanagh is thronged by many people. Hundreds of onlookers stand by to watch him perform. It's kind of a tradition at the Ploughing at this stage. He performs twice a day. And I've thought to myself, I go in to have a look because I haven't seen him for years perform, and still with the comical display, but visibly different because this time he is shaking on stage as he performs in front of many, but is very open about his Parkinson's.
But listen, I won't keep you because you're a busy man. But listen, can I just say one thing to you? I have to say, I have a genuine admiration for you as a performer.
Yeah.
Because I'll tell you why. It's very difficult for you to go on stage.
Yeah.
And be moving around the way you are.
Yeah.
And to hold yourself the way you are. And I think a lot of people would not. They'd hide away.
No, Shay Healy has it. And Shay said to me, what you do now, when you go out anywhere, says you... tell everybody, because then they'll know. Otherwise, they think you had a cocaine or something.
Yeah.
And no, I'm happy the way I am. And Nancy's, they're all good for helping me.
We have a new t-shirt called Chicken Pox. You ready now? You can have your dinner. Chicken Pox. Chicken Pox. Chicken Pox. Chicken Pox. Chicken
With the pub, everyone comes into the pub. My father's there usually. As you say, you met them up there, the lads drinking tea, and they have their 11s, you could say, every morning. But people who come up to my father and literally relive their time that they met Joe, whether it was 40 years ago, 20 years ago, whatever, then they'd say, on there, sir. How's it going?
Penny Joe Dolan, no?
So, but yeah, that was it. So, How's it going? Very good. So they meet every day and they have the crack, but everyone comes in to my father and they relive their story with Joe. Hi, Tommy. This is my town. I'm proud of it.
Yes.
But how's it going? Good, good.
So we're going to the statue. We're at the statue now.
Yeah, we're at the statue now.
And was he that height?
He was that height.
Was he? So yeah. Let's see now. Yeah. So I'm just at his shoulder.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So when you think of it, there's a little plinth here as well, right? Mm. He would have been smaller than me, but my father is exactly the same height as Joe. But I mean, people then think he must be taller than that, or yeah. Do you know?
Well, I think it's because the suits were big, he was larger than life. You know, you did expect him to be, I did expect him to be taller now than that.
Totally, and when you drive by, you go, he wasn't that size. He should be up taller, he should be down lower, or whatever. That is his. That is exactly his height. And Adrian actually, he went to England, and Daddy and himself, and your man opened the door of the garage, and here's Joe standing and going, oh!
So he was just standing in bronze.
You're standing in bronze, you know, and they're going, jeez. Well, there was a little, it was done in sort of, it wasn't bronze first, so they could change it and move it and do whatever they like, so they had to get everything right.
Sure, I am a Westmead bachelor, me